10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
According to TikTok, baking soda not only stops the odor in the cat litter box, it can cure diabetes. And now, Dr. Dave Weather.
Still, every damn night. Still, every damn night. Still, every damn night.
Chris Merrill, a successful, effective, popular broadcaster in the Southland at KFI in Los Angeles. Chris Merrill is live on a live radio show on Sunday night. This is it. This is the only one that isn't the Bitcoin show or annuities and you show.
Yeah,
this
right.
is a live actual radio show. Chris Merrill, welcome to Sterling every damn Sunday.
It is an honor being on a live show. I mean it. And Sterling, this is one of those things that drives me crazy is that we see this nationwide where we go, well, you know, we could broker that show on the weekend. Well, you know, overnight, nobody's really. This is where people get to flex a little bit, right? I mean, you get away with things that people don't get away with during the afternoons. They don't get away with things during the middays. I mean, this is a place for trying new things.
Well, Chris Merrill, a great broadcaster, I get away with whatever I want at any time of day. Just
Good
because.
That's
just
amazing.
Because they're terrified to argue with me. Now, Chris,
that's smart.
You're in the Southland. You're live. You've been on the air until moments ago. Please give us a summary of the events that took place today in Los Angeles, which are shocking and amazing.
Yeah.
And mostly, I want your opinion on what happened.
Oh, I love the opinion. So we started coverage at KFI a little bit before noon our time, 3 o'clock there. And there were protests that were planned originally. The protests had gone on for the last couple of days, and they sort of exploded in a few little pockets yesterday. And that became national news, and that's why the president said he is going to deploy the National Guard. And he called up the National Guard without consultation with the governor or the mayor. It's the first time a president has sent the National Guard with over the objections of local officials since 1965 with desegregation in the South. And so he sent the National Guard to go protect the federal detention center, the federal building that is in downtown Los Angeles. So the National Guard set up, and they were there. Protesters started coming in, and our coverage started about noon. There were about 100 protesters there at the time, mostly just yelling and screaming profanities. Nothing too out of the ordinary. That crowd continued to grow. There were protests planned for City Hall, which is about 2 blocks away. That protest was planned for about 2 o'clock. About 1 o'clock, the National Guard started pushing people out into the street. And they did that, we find out later, because there were federal vehicles that were coming from Union Station, which is another couple of blocks away. And they were coming into that federal building. They needed to clear the way of protesters. So they started this skirmish line and started pushing protesters back. They came in. Our reporter on the scene, we heard a bang, and then he started coughing. There was some sort of smoke in the air, and we don't know if that came from protesters who, you know, bring some of their own devices, or if that came from law enforcement. Finally, we hear this chaos, and then it sort of subsides a little bit. And then when we hear these sirens and more vehicles coming in, then he says, something's happening. And he starts pushing, you know, the National Guard started pushing people again. We heard more bangs, and you could hear this sort of eruption of activity going on, and all of a sudden my guy goes dark, just goes nothing, no signal. And I had been listening to him so much, I should have been paying attention, and I should have been thinking, all right, where am I going to go with this? But he goes dark, and I thought, is he okay? I mean, did our reporter just get shot? I had no idea. So fortunately, he was unharmed. He did catch some tear gas, so he got tear gas. So I get a text message from him, and I said, you know, we're gonna try to get him back in the air, and I'm kind of tap dancing a little bit. And I got a text from him during the commercial break, and he said to get me back on the air now. He says things are popping off, as my kids say. So we were able to get him back on a cell phone, and he sort of described the scene of what just happened and why there was all this other stuff, this big kerfluffle. Fast forward another hour, and what was going on from City Hall, the planned protest at 2 o'clock. They made their way down the street. They merged with the protests around the federal building. And then we had a couple of thousand people who were all at that federal building. That's when we had CHP, it's a California Highway Patrol, who wanted to keep people off the streets. They started making their way out of the freeway. Freeway ends up getting closed down because when you protest, you got to go shut down traffic on a freeway. Boneheads. And then the other law enforcement, not National Guard, but other local law enforcement started pushing people away from the federal building, and eventually they kind of dispersed. Right now it's a little bit of mop-up. There were some Waymos, which are the self-driving cars. Do you guys have Waymos yet? Sterling,
well,
do you have the self-driving cars?
Fortunately, it's a national show, so yeah. I'm sure some affiliates have self-driving cars, but I have no interest in them. Do you have interest in self-driving cars?
I mean, I have interest in them getting the hell out of the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, when they're on the road. I'm not afraid of them or anything, but because I've lived in a couple of different places where they're pretty prevalent, so they've just, but they tend to just take up a lot of space, and then it's hard to see around. Anyway.
Well, Chris Merrill, let me ask you this.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Sorry. In your opinion, how many people were at City Hall and how many people were at this other location, the Home Depot or whatever it was? How many people do you think were there? How big was this crowd?
So the Home Depot protest was yesterday, and that was just a couple hundred people, but it got a little out of hand. That's where they started having the rubber bullets and things. The protest today that was at City Hall and then later merged with this one at the federal building, they were only about two blocks apart, and I'm going to guess 3,000 people total. But they were in a pretty confined area, about one block. And then people with Waymos came down to start joining them. And then protesters started beating the Waymos, and they lit the Waymos on fire, much to your joy.
About how many Waymos were set on fire, Chris?
Five. And they put out the most awful black smoke, and I'm sure they're going to be fined by the California Department of Environmental Quality.
And approximately how many police officers, National Guard, local guard, how many police officer types do you think were there?
I am going to guess. I know National Guard was about 100 this morning, and they have National Guard at two different locations. So maybe 100 or 150 this morning, and you didn't see them all at once. The show of force, though, from CHP and the other local law enforcement, I'm going to say probably 300 or so.
We had about 500 people who were in uniforms and about 3,000 people who were not.
Yeah.
And it sounds to me, not to minimize the rubber bullets and the exploding cars, it sounds to me like a lot of nonsense. It does not sound to me like a real protest or a real riot. Now, where was the mayor in all this? Because those CHIPS officers would not have been there if the mayor hadn't sent them.
So that's Highway Patrol, which is a little different than the mayor. Right. So there were questions. Right. The mayor had a press conference just before 5 o'clock our time. And then what the mayor said was that she hadn't activated LAPD, but they were on standby. So there were a lot of questions about why the LAPD wasn't there earlier on, since these people were spilling over into city streets. So we don't know. She hasn't said a whole lot. She did encourage people to continue protesting. She said, keep expressing your anger and outrage, but do it peacefully. And she claimed that all of the chaos today was provoked by the Trump administration. So that's what we heard from the mayor.
They had a troublesome crowd that was told by the mayor to do whatever you're going to do peacefully. Just like on January 6th, President Trump said, do whatever you're going to do peacefully. Same thing, exactly the same dynamic.
To that point, you had critics of President Trump on that day who are now on the side of the protesters this time. And then you had supporters of President Trump on that day who are now opposed to what the mayor is saying. So it certainly comes down, your perspective seems to be based on your biases. Right,
Chris Merrill is a host on KFI, a broadcaster in the Southland of California, in Los Angeles. He was on the air all this afternoon, totally up to date on the protest and the National Guard visiting Los Angeles. What was the governor saying? Because like he was really quiet, and then he was kind of annoying. What did he say today? Did he say anything today?
I haven't heard him say anything today. Now, I mean, we had a press conference from the mayor. I haven't heard anything from Newsom today. Newsom did say yesterday that this was Trump's fault, and then he said he was going to withhold the taxes for something else. But he hasn't. I have not heard anything from him today. It's not to say he hasn't said anything, but it hasn't made it across my desk. And I've been paying attention to it.
One final thing, Chris Merrill.
Yeah.
Because we're not all there, we don't all have the privilege of living in Los Angeles and Southern California. The area where these protests took place, what is around it? Are these homes, residential, city, downtown? Where is this?
No, this is a city center. This is a civic center. There are some apartments in this area, but this is very much any city center or downtown of any major metro. So you've got your city hall, you've got your Union Station, you've got the federal buildings, all the goings on. Any place I've ever lived, there's always been kind of this downtown area where, you see the tall buildings in the skyline shots. When you're watching TV shows, this is right in the middle of all those.
Chris Merrill,
very industrial. Or not industrial, I should say, very...
business.
Business, yeah, thank you.
Business, government. Chris Merrill, do you think this accomplished anything? Because it sounds like not many people showed up. A lot of cops and National Guard showed up. Mayor said virtually nothing, as usual. And we didn't hear from the governor of California. Oh, my gosh. Did this achieve anything, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it achieved something for both sides of this argument. And that something is the same thing, and that is that they got photo ops. So if you are someone who is supporting the administration and the crackdowns, you saw these photo ops of people behaving badly, burning Waymos, creating chaos and havoc, and you went, we've got to crack down on this. If you're somebody who supports the anti-ICE movement right now, you see a few thousand people who are showing up that feel like you do, and they're all standing up to this authoritarian government that is cracking down on the good, hardworking people that are trying to make their way in this country. So it just continues to add fuel to the fire. But as far as accomplishing anything tangible today, no.
All right. Great job. Thank you. Live, right after his radio show in Los Angeles on KFI, Chris Merrill is here with Walter M. Sterling. Sterling, every damn night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here. Make sure your headshot is actually current and looks like the real you.
Don't post a picture from high school and show up 40 years later using that headshot as advertising.
Coming up on Sterling every damn night.
A little something, something. Confirmed. Strippers on the loose. Later. Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode, I tell the story how a bunch of Department of Sanitation workers beat the hell out of a guy for punching an NYPD mounted horse. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
A target-rich environment. Details later. The people of Walmart. 1210 WPHT Sterling every damn night.
Hey, it's Sterling. Sterling every damn night. He's not the young generation, but he's always right.
Sterling every damn Sunday, live on Sunday night on I-90, I-80. We're driving across the country. We're driving up and down the East Coast, the West Coast, the 101, the 5. Welcome. It's a live radio show. I keep saying that because I am even shocked that at this point in history, I need to say it because so many broadcasters are irresponsible and they don't do what they're supposed to do, which is entertain you and me. We're supposed to be entertained. This is all supposed to be live and wonderful and groovy. Now, we just heard from Chris Merrill, Southern California broadcaster who was on the air all day today, who gave us an update on the situation in Los Angeles with the protesters and the National Guard. Now, John Kennedy had a similar problem. He had a governor of Alabama, George Wallace, who stood in the door of a school and did not allow Negroes to go into that school. This is what Kennedy did.
Following a series of threats and defiant statements, the presence of Alabama National Guardsmen was required on the University of Alabama to carry out the final and unequivocal order of the United States District Court of the Northern District of Alabama. That order called for the admission of two clearly qualified young Alabama residents who happened to have been born Negro. That they were admitted peacefully on the campus is due in good measure to the conduct of the students of the University of Alabama who met their responsibilities in a constructive way.
And then a few years later, President Johnson had the same problem with the same governor, Governor Wallace, and he got him on the phone. And listen carefully as to what Johnson says he's going to send in. Listen carefully to the words he used to describe the officers that he was going to send to Alabama.
We're going to do the best we can, but we hope that you might use your influence to at least make them have an orderly march.
I think that your concern is justified. If you'd call up your own guard, their conduct has been very good. If your patrolman got to go on back to watch the highways, you call up your own guard and into the service of the state, and I would ask our best people to cooperate, our Defense Department, to provide a group of counselors, advisors to work with them, and I would, if you wanted me to, work with you and assure you that proper contingencies of men would be stationed at Craig and Maxwell in the event that the unlikely event they were needed, and if the situation were to deteriorate, we can't always anticipate. Maybe we'd have to federalize them, but put them under a single command, and I would be glad to take those steps.
To send in not guard, not military, but that's what they were. But Johnson was smart enough to label them advisors. We will send in military advisors to work with your National Guard, to work with the Alabama National Guard. But he didn't call them National Guard. That was because he was a Southerner, and he was talking to another Southerner. And he knew it would inflame the situation if he said he was going to send in guardsmen. But he was going to send in guardsmen. He was going to send in military. But he called them advisors. Best that I can hear from Chris Merrill in Southern California is there was a lot of nonsense about nothing. The mayor didn't say anything in Los Angeles, barely. The governor was silent today. Maybe 3,000 people showed up, and maybe they did something, and at least 500 people in uniforms were there to protect. And I know that area. It's a pretty sterile area of government buildings in Los Angeles. People don't live around it. There isn't a retail area. Nobody was threatened. Oh, yeah, gee, and it was a Sunday. All of those buildings were closed. Enough. You know, just enough. Live radio, my phone number is 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and I am here every Sunday for you from 10 p.m. Eastern to 1 a.m. Eastern. Sterling every damn Sunday.
It's Sterling every damn night. It's radio. Bosses hate his show, and that's all you need to know. So for radio that doesn't bite, it's Sterling every damn night.
There's Matias Boom Boom Hollywood in Southern California. Welcome to Sterling Every Damn Night. Matias provides us with movie reviews, but not film reviews. They're not film. These are movie reviews of movies that you would actually go and see, not the ones that the Academy seems to favor or people who are professors teaching the history of film. No, Matias is like a real guy. By the way, Matias, did you hear that Sarah Snook, who was the star of Succession, the daughter in Succession, she has won the Tony for Best Actress in her portrayal of Dorian Gray?
Well, that's very interesting. I have yet to see that show. Of course, I remember the wonderful MGM 1945 movie. I think it's the best version of three or four that have been made over the years. It's nice to see that old story of Oscar Wilde coming back to life again.
And she's a great actress. She's just terrific. And she did such a good job on Succession. And she just had a baby. So I'm a little surprised that she took on a Broadway show right away. But she's Australian. She probably just wanted to get out of town.
Likely, quite so. You know, I was really impressed with Chris Merrill's report earlier, yesterday in Los Angeles during the time of the riots. I was a mile away at the Orpheum Theater where I was doing two shows, like in the old days in vaudeville, two shows a day at the Orpheum, which is an old vaudeville house, a 2,000-seat movie palace. And we were doing two vintage shows. We had a Harold Lloyd silent movie with a pipe organ. And then later we had the wonderful picture that starred Gregory Peck, Roman Holiday, and Gregory Peck's daughter was there. And so we had a vintage movie palace filled with 2,000 people, because this is a yearly event where they reopen up all the Broadway movie palaces, and people come from all over the country, filling up the downtown area of Los Angeles. And what was interesting, when Chris mentioned that this is really more of a photo op, these protests, we heard about them about middle of the day. So we went out and looked on the street, and it was, you could have gone deer hunting in the middle of the street. Very little traffic, almost no people at all. And this was only a mile away, so we had no clue of this really going on, aside from hearing reports that it was happening and that a portion of the freeway had been closed. But we had no evidence after we left. I got there at 10:30 in the morning. We left around midnight, and there was no traffic flow problems whatsoever and no evidence of anything that was happening just a mile away from us in downtown Los Angeles.
I've had that feeling, and Chris Merrill reached to that. Everything I've heard about it and saw about it, I'm like, that's an encapsulated event. It was done in a plaza with government buildings on a Sunday or a Saturday. No one in the government works on a Saturday, Sunday, or Friday from May to October. And there was nobody there. If they wanted to have impact, go do it at Universal City.
Sure. And, of course, we're thinking, gosh, if we're going to have a problem, we've got 2,000 people in some of these old movie palaces that can seat that many people. We were concerned for the safety of the patrons in the building. But there was no evidence of anything. You could literally walk out in the street, and it was like a Sunday. I mean, tumbleweeds were coming down the street. A little bit of traffic, but not a lot, even for Los Angeles. So, sadly, I think the smoke is greater than the fire here.
I totally agree. Couldn't be happier. Couldn't be happier that the people of Los Angeles and the area are not in any danger except of being bored out of their minds by that protest.
Now, speaking of fire, you know, it's been 102 days, Walter, since the L.A. fire started. And last Memorial Day, finally they opened the Pacific Coast Highway. So there's now open to everybody can use it again, not just residents. And in the And since then, just in just a brief little follow-up, I know I'm here to talk about movies, but since
my friend, you're in Los Angeles, you're talking about the fires. It's fascinating. This is Matias Boom Boom in Hollywood. Please go ahead and tell us about the progress of the fires in Los Angeles and the repairs.
So they've been doing quite a bit. Obviously, the Pacific Coast Highway is open again. And the governor has seen that a lot of buildings have been repaired, a lot of things that the city have gone through all of their processes of permitting. A lot of people are able to at least get some things done. Some of the toxic waste removal things are taking a long time. I think 3,300 3,300 properties have been cleared to progress further in reconstruction. So things are moving along. I know it's a slow process, and some of these people, as we talked about 102 days ago, are really going to be displaced maybe 10 years if you think about rebuilding and all the permitting problems. But slowly, Angelenos are coming back, and I think that's a bigger story than the smoke and mirrors going downtown. And also in Paramount, you heard about the Paramount issue, which was also some protest. That's closer to Santa Monica, Long Beach, rather Long Beach. Between downtown Los Angeles and Long Beach, there's a freeway and interstate called 710, and that's further. It's smack dab in the middle near Compton, so that's not even near downtown Los Angeles. Los Angeles County is quite huge. As a matter of fact, it's bigger than some of the states in the East Coast. So I think that there's more smoke than fire in that whole thing. But anyway, I probably should talk about a movie tonight with the Sheik of Araby, Walter Sterling.
Yes, please.
We have a movie called... And this is actually one of those arty films that maybe the Academy likes, but I actually liked it. And why do I like it? Because it's clever. And if there's anything I like, it's clever. This is a movie called The Phoenician Scheme. This is from Wes Anderson, who makes, that overused word, quirky movies. But they're terribly clever, and he gets a lot of people to act that are big names. And, you know, you remember years ago, Woody Allen. Everybody wanted to be in a Woody Allen movie until he was canceled. And I think the same is true for Wes Anderson. Huge cast in this. This is
Let me just put it in perspective. He made the Lincoln movie that won all those awards, and he made Licorice Pizza, which should have won all of the awards. Now, tell us about this movie.
Well, this stars Mia Threpleton. Now, if that's not a familiar name to you, she is the actress daughter of Kate Winslet. She's 24 years old, and in it, she plays a nun who is the daughter of this great industrialist played by Benicio del Toro, Zsa Zsa Korda, who's named after the great film producer, of course, Alexander Korda, who made a lot of movies in England in the 40s. And this, his only daughter, who's a nun, Sister Lisa, is the sole heir to his vast fortune. Now, once she's set up that she is the heir, he embarks on a deal that has his entire family the target of scheming tycoons, terrorists, assassins. And Michael Cera's in this movie as the family tutor. Oh. Riz Ahmed is Prince Farouk. Tom Hanks plays Leland, who meets with Korda in his private railroad car, something I had an experience with just recently, and partner Bryan Cranston in the role of Reagan, Jeffrey Wright, Scarlett Johansson, Benedict Cumberbatch, Willem Dafoe, Hope Davis, F. Murray Abraham, and Bill Murray, get this, as God. Bill Murray is God. Round out the cast. So this is delightful, it's absurd, and it's clever. And if there's anything I like about a movie, is when it's clever. So that's from Wes Anderson, and the movie's called The Phoenician Scheme, and it's playing everywhere.
The Phoenician Scheme by Wes Anderson, more importantly, the son of Ernie Anderson, the man who said, "Tonight, on the Love Boat." That was Ernie Anderson. And Wes Anderson is his son. You're the best Mateus in Boom Boom in Hollywood. Thank you for being live on Sterling every damn Sunday.
Gaffneys, meet the Gaffneys. They live in a 150-year-old house. They've got 8 kids. We don't have time to name them all. Sometimes Dan and Becky like to bicker, and it's always good for a snicker. When you're with the Gaffneys, you know it's Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. It's Sterling every damn night. Oh!
I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
We're here to tell you about life in our old house and living with our 8 children. And further moving us into the Von Trapp family, you're now managing a theater. And have this word about people who submit to perform and their headshots.
Okay, so let's go back one step. This all started with me and having to do a new headshot. So I have not taken an actual real professional headshot in years because I haven't needed one for anything. If I've needed a picture to post for something, you know, there's something I can find one of me and the kids, whatever. But I haven't done a headshot. And I am so crazy over the fact that people post these pictures. They're so incredibly filtered. They use old pictures and then they show up and they look nothing like you saw them. So I was adamant about my headshot being like not that way in any way, shape or form. Pepper Jane, our 12-year-old child, who was 11 at the time, took my picture on my phone and I had like the flyaways on my hair because my hair was super frizzy.
But no filters.
But no filters.
Yeah, no filter Friday.
And
yes.
We get people all the time who like submit these headshots and then you start looking at them and seeing what they present and it's nothing like what their headshot looks like. It's shocking.
Yeah, for example, they look like a young 30-something performer. Their material looks good, whatever. You book them, they come in. They're 80.
And then the funny thing is, like the 80-year-old old ladies who come to see like the young guy who's doing a tribute to somebody, they're like, oh, he looked nothing like him. Well, because that was 40 years ago, ma'am, when he started doing this gig. And it's like any other profession where you post a picture of somebody else's work, like a florist. You post a picture of like national.
We've seen this. There was a florist in our area posting pictures and then of what he was making supposedly, and then we went to the actual wedding where he was providing the flowers.
It's horrible.
That's not, he was using photos from someone else's work presenting it as his.
Okay.
And we've seen this with hardscapers and landscapers too that take pictures of this beautiful work. It's not their work. You throw the photo into Google and you can see it's stock images.
Right. And so just present yourself as you are, because I would much rather have you show up 350 pounds heavier than you were when you had your first headshot done and know that that's the look that you have, because there's nothing wrong with it. That's your look. That's what you look like currently, then send me the ugly flowers when you posted the pretty picture. It's equivalent to that, and we need to stop with the filters.
There is one performer who does look like his picture, Walter Sterling.
If you want to see my headshot, you can find me on Instagram as Just Being Mom.
And find me on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show.
If you're looking for my little theater, it's DickensParlorTheater.com.
Dan and Becky Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode, I tell the story how a bunch of Department of Sanitation workers beat the hell out of a guy for punching an NYPD mounted horse. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
Slip and fall scam? Details later. The people of Walmart. Sterling every damn night. A little something something. Confirmed. Strippers on the loose. Later. Sterling every damn night.
Feel the dough. Eat the dough. JB Bakery. Salina and Steve. Sterling every damn night.
Well, this is very big. We have a very big person on, and we're very excited about this. Let's listen.
The dream of a million girls who are more than pretty can come true in Atlantic City. For she may turn out to be the queen of femininity.
It's gone downhill since Burt Parks died. But coming up, you and I are going to talk to Selena from JB Bakery, who is in the running to be the Miss New Jersey candidate for the Miss America pageant. And she will be joined by the great Father James Drucker, who has blessed her competition, and therefore she will win. That's coming up in just seconds with Walter M. Sterling on the giant radio stations across America. We are the king of the Clear Channel radio stations. And I get to spend this time with you every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. My God, that Burt Parks is amazing. That applause, though, that was separate. That was for me. We get in the 18-wheeler. We get in the four-wheeler. We're leaving the weekend because the weekend is the worst time for you and me. It's a time we have to spend with family and be pleasant. Or worse, neighbors, street fairs, barbecues, at the pool, they open the pool. None of that's good for me. My goal maybe yours, is to be completely alone as much as possible. That's my goal. I have an email. It's WalterMSterling@gmail, WalterMSterling@gmail, and a website. And you're going to need the website because tonight, in an hour, I'm going to give you a secret coded message that you can only decode with the Midnight Misfit membership card that you get on the website, which is Walter Sterling Show. Click Midnight Misfits, and you can get the decoder card. Print it out. You don't have to wait for it. It's there, and you're going to need it tonight. How much time we got there, Sean? I'm glad I woke you up, buddy. Sterling every damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Yes, for you, I have put on clean underwear. And now, Dr. Dave Iser.
Here he comes every damn night. It's Walter Sterling, and he's always right.
Feel the dough, eat the dough, J.B. Bakery, Selena and Steve, Sterling every damn night.
All right, Walter M. Sterling, good evening. This is Sterling Every Damn Sunday, a live radio show coast to coast. Welcome to KFPK, WGAN, Phil Zachary's radio station, the great Phil Zachary, the man who taught me how a general manager should look and appear and command the room. That Phil Zachary at WGAN, he walks into a room and he is in charge. Doesn't matter who else is in that room. He is in charge. And I've only known very few people who can do that. Just walk in and boom, they're in charge. Sonny Fox, who used to host Wonderama, he was one of those guys. Ed McLaughlin, the man who syndicated the Rush Limbaugh show, he's one of those guys. He'd walk in a room and, oh, my God. Oh, and Cousin Bruce Murrow, the legendary top 40 disc jockey in the Northeast. He walked in, he hugged everybody, called you cousin, and all was right with the world. Still on the air. Yeah, Cousin Brucey is still on the air every Saturday night. And where else? On WABC. On WABC. And the reason that I need to be in the Radio Hall of Fame is that the longest he ever worked in any one place was Sirius Satellite Radio. He worked there longer than he worked at WABC the first time. And who hired him to Sirius Satellite Radio? And it, no one else in the decision chain, except for the CEO, had a clue how powerful and important he was and is. Thousands of misguided individuals are in the radio industry because they grew up listening to Cousin Brucey under their pillow. It's a fascinating story. Oh, JB Bakery. Steve is the owner. He's not on. He has a timeout. I'm not letting him on. I'll explain why later. But his partner, Selena.
There she is, Miss America.
Who's up to be Miss New Jersey in the Miss America pageant, is here with Father Drucker, the meter, greeter, and eater at J.B. Bakery. Let's just take this in. Let's enjoy Bird Parks.
And come to Atlantic City, for she may turn out to be the queen of femininity. There she is, Miss America. There she is, your ideal. With so many beauties, she took the town
he pre-recorded that. I think he was mouthing that. Now, Selena, when you hear that song, how does it make you feel?
Very excited, and I hope it's playing for me one day when I win and get the crown this weekend.
We expect it. We expect you to win the Miss New Jersey title and then enter the Miss America pageant as Miss New Jersey. I am shocked and a little surprised that you went through a week of rehearsals or a week of tests to see whether or not you were going to win it, and then now you have to wait another week to see if you won?
Well, so I'm going this week to Atlantic City to do the competition. Last week we had rehearsals. We've been having a lot of rehearsals. There's a lot of work that goes into preparing for it, and this is the official week. I'm driving down to Atlantic City tomorrow, and Tuesday's the official first day. I have my interview on Wednesday and then competitions through Saturday. And I'll know Saturday night whether or not I've won.
Miss New Jersey.
Yes, Miss New Jersey.
Is this the way it works in every state?
Yes. So every state has its own competition. And they do vary a little bit, but generally they're the same. They're all scored pretty much the same. And then we'll go up. Whoever wins the state title will go to the national competition.
And all of the state title competitions are taking place now?
So, yeah, they're within a month of each other. I know some of them already took place, and some of them are like a week or so after this one, but I think they're all going to be wrapping up by the end of this month.
Now, Father Jim Drucker is a retired Catholic priest. He was a Catholic priest active for about 45 years. Now he hangs out in this bakery, the JB Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey, near the shore. He's a meter and greeter. How do you feel that, do you feel this is a good competition? Is this something that is sacrilegious in any way?
No, I think it's a beautiful thing, you know, because God created man. And to help man live in this earth, in this life, he created woman. He breathed a soul into man. He breathed a soul into woman. So each are the gift of God as womanhood, as manhood.
How would you feel about a Mr. America contest with swimsuit competition?
Well, personally, I would not be in favor of something like that, personally.
Now, you're keeping your eyes on our new Pope. Has the new Pope done anything controversial just yet, Father Drucker?
No, nothing. Certainly from this humble, small, tiny little priest, I would say that everything Pope Leo is accomplishing is the grace of God through the papacy and his love for Christ.
As a priest for 45 years, I am surprised that you were not made a Monsignor. What would it take to have been a Monsignor?
Well, a Monsignor is really a title, so, and that's usually up to a respected bishop who is the apostle, as we believe in the Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church, who can designate this honor. It's just one an honor that's a little higher level of respect. Of say a person has been in the priesthood for many years, has done great work, possibly at the chantry or in his pastoral work, and the bishop has the right to designate by his choice whom he wishes to make into or give the honor and bestow the honor of Monsignor. And the title, actually, as I understand it, is actually from, like, even the cardinals have Monsignor titles as well. And in Rome, bishops are actually called Monsignori. So the title actually goes along with cardinal. There's a priest cardinal, Monsignor cardinal. And it's a beautiful title, and it's something that the bishop has the right to give to that priest in honor or not. And they're very careful to just give that honor to just anyone. They're very selective and very careful, Walter.
All right. Now, Father Jim Drucker, if you were to visit the Vatican and you needed to stay there for a week, would they let you stay in one of the Vatican apartments?
I do not believe so. I guess I could go through chain of command, as we would say, maybe contact someone I know there. Years ago, it would have been an easy accomplishment because I knew that, as I shared in one of your shows, Peter Canisius J. Van Leerdy, who was the Bishop of Rome when the Pope would leave, he would then attain the title of bishop. He was the Vicar General. And he was a wonderful man, and if he were there today, and I would call, certainly. But it's not that easy, because this is reserved for the cardinals, for the Monsignory, the bishops, and very rarely is a priest honored with that. Usually a priest, if you were to go there, he might go to the American College or the Russicum for the Eastern Rite and probably stay at that seminary.
All right, this is Father Jim Drucker, who hangs out at the J.B. Bakery. Do you have a final prayer that you expect Selena to help leverage her into the Miss New Jersey title?
You mean to offer a prayer for her now? Is that what you're suggesting?
No. Have you given her secretly a prayer that you expect her to say as they are making their judgments? Have you given her a prayer?
It's ironic you talked about that, because we kind of talked about that today, Selena. Am I right?
We did, definitely.
Did he give you a prayer?
Good, Selena.
Well, he didn't instruct me on exactly what to say, but we did talk about what I should be thinking about and how I should go in and just be myself and give the rest to God.
There you go. Exactly. All right, Father Jim Drucker, Selena from J.B. Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey, thank you so much for being on Sterling every damn Sunday.
Been any type of listener to Sterling Every Damn Night, you've heard a lot about the 35 Club. 35 Club in Sayreville, New Jersey, shut down by authorities because they accused the dancers and the entire establishment of being nothing but a front for prostitution. And the suburban New Jersey couple who owned that club confirmed it in a guilty plea, trying to get less jail time. Doreen and Anthony, a.k.a. Big Tony Acchiardi of Freehold, are going to pay $705,000 in unpaid taxes to avoid jail time. They admit that their club was a hotbed of prostitution as part of that plea deal. No word on whether they turned on other defendants or not. It's often been said that at your neighborhood jiggle joint, you can negotiate, shall we say, with one of the ladies for a little extra extra. And at Club 35, the negotiations were out in the open. Most jiggle joints, gentlemen's clubs, they want to avoid the stigma of past seediness in the strip club industry. Essentially, they want to talk about the strip club as being a great place for couples to go to, for guys that may be on the road, maybe a lonely man without a lady in his life. Club 35, it delivered on a lot of those things, except in New Jersey and federally, prostitution, well, is illegal. Doreen and Big Tony, they'll be hanging out and not doing jail time, and perhaps will rebound with another jiggle joint sometime in the future. Salute from the Champagne Room. This is Velo Hool. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night. Slip and fall scam? Details later. The people of Walmart. Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode, I tell the story how a bunch of Department of Sanitation workers beat the hell out of a guy for punching an NYPD mounted horse. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
Here's the story of a radio executive.
Disgraced cosmonaut. And now he's back on the radio.
from coast to coast, from Maine to Sacramento. This is Sterling every damn Sunday, here every damn Sunday, live, KGGF, Coffeyville, Kansas. 5,000 watts at the right part of the dial. Featuring James Copeland every morning with his Tradio show. You can sell stuff. But James Copeland does a very funny show that you would not expect in Coffeyville, Kansas. Here's this guy who does mornings in Coffeyville, Kansas, James Copeland. Brilliant young man. For about a year, I had the privilege of him working on this show. He contributed a lot to the point where I'm spoiled. Like, I expect everybody to be as good as James Copeland, and I'm not as good as James Copeland. He goes to a good university, went to University of Kansas. He gets out, and me, Lee Harris, many people in the radio industry spotted him, and were like, this guy is quite something. He's amazing. A wizard. He put together my show like in seconds every week. I didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to explain anything. We cut the spots, the promos, done, 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 done. It was amazing. And but I wasn't alone. He was offered to be in the engineering department at the Wright Company in New York City, like right out of college, to work at the Wright Radio Company out of New York City, which will go nameless. But boy, it was some offer. They met him and offered him a job. They didn't know him before he came in the office. They didn't have a job open. Oh, don't go anywhere, James. We're going to keep you. And he turned it down. And some other jobs. He wanted to be a community market morning man. And he will be a KGGF the rest of his life if he wants to be. He's that guy. He can fix anything. He has every FCC license, and he has broadcast engineer certificates that I don't even know what they are. I don't even understand what they could possibly be, but he has all these certificates. And he's a ham operator. He's got a ham radio. It's Pride Month. And every show I pick a song that I believe that the Pride community would like. Sterling every damn Sunday, and you waiting to hit the love truck stop. Welcome, Walter M. Sterling, coast to coast. Exciting. A live radio show. The other shows that are on, not live. They're guilty of best of. That's why in just seconds I'm going to tell you who has won the Tony Awards so far. They can't do that. But first, Let's enjoy a song that I believe the LGBT community loves.
Clang, clang, clang went the trolley. Ding, ding,
it's
ding,
Pride Month.
Bell.
And not for
zing,
lions.
Zing, zing, went my heart strings from the moment I saw him, I fell. Chug, chug, chug went the motor. Bump, bump, bump went the brake. Went my heartstrings. When he smiled, I could feel a car shake. He tipped
his hat and took a seat. He said he hoped he hadn't stepped upon my feet. He asked my name, I held my breath. I couldn't speak because he scared me half to death.
Mai Tai, the LGBT community celebrating this month, Pride Month, and Sterling every damn Sunday presenting songs that we believe the community will love. The Tony Awards, winners and honorees, best play, purpose, best musical, maybe happy ending, best book of a musical, maybe happy ending, best original score, you ready? Maybe happy ending. Now we have to deal with that play. Best revival of a play, Eureka Day. Never heard of it. Best revival of a musical, Sunset Boulevard. Best performance by an actor in a leading role in a play, Cole Escola for Oh Mary. Best performance by an actress in a leading role in a play, Sarah Snook. You remember her from Succession, the TV show Succession, about the Murdoch family. Although they deny it, she was the star of The Picture of Dorian Gray. Best performance by an actor in a leading role in a musical, Darren Criss, for what? Maybe Happy Ending. Best performance by an actress in a leading role in a musical, Nicole Scherzinger, Sunset Boulevard. Best performance by an actor in a featured role in a play, Frances Drew, Yellow Face. Best performance by an actress in a featured role in a play, Carrie Young, in Purpose. Best performance by an actor in a featured role in a musical, Jack Malone. And those are the big ones. Let me just check and make sure I got you all the big ones. You don't care about costume designer. You don't care about costume designer for a musical. You don't care about lighting design. Nah, you don't care about any of that. All right, those are the Tonys. They were tonight. LGBT month. Pride month. Why is he saying all this? He sounds like he isn't embracing Pride month. When my middle daughter was 16 and we're driving across, I'll never forget the spot. We're driving across a bridge to go to what? Dance class. And she's an angel. My middle daughter, her life will be blessed. Nothing will touch that kid. She was born with angels around her. Sweetest kid you ever met in your life. And I'm saying this almost objectively, even though I'm her father. Beautiful. Crazy beautiful. And therefore gets away with anything she wants. Anything she wants. No, another American Girl doll, no problem. Another dance class, no problem. She became a competitive ballerina. Won many trophies, many very large, expensive trophies. And I went to every one of those competitions. I was so proud of her. She's such a great dancer, so skilled. And then she was a passenger in a car wreck. And I asked you whether or not she should sue, get a lawyer. And you, man, the phone lines were jammed. And you said, yes, don't let her tell you she doesn't want a lawyer. You get a lawyer. You be a parent. You be a parent, because if you don't, you will regret it. That kid, well, she was injured badly in that car wreck, and she did sue, and she won. And therefore, she has a little nest. She has a little security, which she deserves, because the trade-off is she can't dance anymore. That was the injury. And her wrist. She had to have a surgery on her wrist. But when she was 16, we were driving across a bridge going to dance class. And she said to me quietly out of nowhere, she said, "Dad, I'm bi." Now, I knew at that moment, and remember, I'm in show business, so I was born very open-minded about these things. And I spent much of my life in Greenwich Village in New York City. So I'm very open-minded about these things. And I said, I knew whatever I said next would determine our future in terms of our relationship until we died. If I said the wrong thing at that moment, this would be hours of psychiatry, and she wouldn't talk to me. I said, "You're bi?" "Yes." "Oh, does that mean I'm going to have to pay for two weddings?" And that's what I said. And we've had a relationship that enables me to talk about it anytime I want. Well, now, okay, that was 16 chit-chat. 17, 16, chit-chat, 18, 19. Well, at 19, it changed. Because up until the age of 19, she was bi dating a guy. Several. But now she's 19, and she has a girlfriend. And this is a real girlfriend. This is a real relationship. And this my daughter is the hearts and flower poetry, loves her kitten girl. That she is. Little sweetheart, wants to do speech therapy, wants to work with children, wants to do special ed. Every nonprofit career possible. That's what she wants to focus on. And again, I say, hey, that's terrific. She's going to the right college for her. She lives in the right place for her. All of this. But now she has a girlfriend who is not the Hearts and Flowers girlfriend. She has a girlfriend who is in the Army Reserves and has a carry permit, a gun carry permit, and goes to the shooting range for the hell of it. And I said, "Have you taken Meredith, my daughter, to the shooting range?" Well, that hasn't happened yet, but I hope it does. Couldn't be more opposite in terms of, quote, quote, lifestyle. But, oh, my gosh, they get along great. They get along terrific. And the girlfriend wanted to move in with her. They wanted to, she wanted her to have the relationship where they're living together. My daughter gave a surprising response because this is a good relationship. They get along the way a true partnership should get along, in my opinion. And my daughter says, "No, I'm 19. I'm not ready to settle down like that. Yeah, I'm your girlfriend. We're together. We're monogamous. That's not an issue. But I don't want to live with you yet. I'm not ready for that." And I'm so proud of her that she was able to put up that boundary. And that is because of why. Why was she able to do that? Because of her father. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
On this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I tell the story how the New York City Police Department works hand in fist with the New York City Department of Sanitation. As I've stated on this show many times, one of the worst details an NYPD member can work is the dreaded Times Square on New Year's Eve detail. You got to be down there first thing in the afternoon. It's usually freezing out. You're all bundled up. The supervisors are screaming and yelling at you to move barriers, move barricades. You wind up eating at like 4 o'clock and then you can't take a break. Then the drunks show up. They're packed into these pens like cattle. They're drunk. They're vomiting in the crowd. They're throwing things. People are getting felt up and robbed. It's just a mess. One year on New Year's Eve, a friend of mine got assigned to Madison Square Garden, What wound up happening is there was a concert that night, and he was thrilled. He figured, this is great. I'm not on the beaten path. It's just going to be a concert. It's going to be just fine. So he's standing out there. The concert lets out at 11 o'clock, but guess what? Everybody was celebrating too much in this concert. They came out drunk. They're throwing bottles. They're getting crazy. So what wound up happening is they had to call in the mounted unit. The NYPD mounted unit is great for crowd control. When people see that horse coming, they tend to get out of the way. No one wants to get stepped on by one of those things. And not only are they a deterrent, but when a mounted cop has to go into a crowd, all they got to do is turn that horse sideways. When that horse's butt goes sideways, it knocks people flying many feet. Most people don't want to tangle with a horse. So my buddy explains that as the horse is kind of moving people around in a crowd, there's some drunk just staring at the horse. He walks up to it like Mongo in Blazing Saddles and punches the horse in the side of the head. Well, there was a bunch of sanitation workers in their green uniforms, and they're watching this, and sanitation workers are down at Times Square on New Year's Eve to clean up after the mounted horses, and they pick up the confetti after the ball drops. Well, these sanitation workers were incensed, and before the mounted cop could get off his horse and give this guy a good old-fashioned kick in the hole, the sanitation workers went to work on the guy. They beat the crap out of him, hitting him with fists and their push brooms and their broomsticks. When the cop got off the horse, all the mounted cops disappeared into the crowd, and he had an arrest. Everyone thinks that all heroes wear blue. Not so. Sometimes heroes wear green New York City Department of Sanitation worker uniforms. So for more behind-the-scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Presumption and Dysfunction.
Slip and fall scam? Details later. The people of Walmart. Sterling every damn night.
Tabitha's hand lingered at her waist, heat radiating from her palm through the shirt's thin fabric. Astrid wondered if anyone around them noticed, and then decided she didn't care.
Warm water Sterling does his nightly show. The misfits all turn on the radio. He'll complain and blame with words that bite, and he does it every damn night. When Walter Sterling does his mighty show.
Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday. Welcome. It's a live radio show on Sunday night. There isn't another one. God, do I love this song. This is amazing.
If I had to choose just one day to last my whole life through, it
this is the month when at night at this time you and I step outside, get a break in our drive, we just stop and we inhale the honeysuckles, hydrangea, the pine. It smells magical because it is. And it's okay, even though you're tough and you're a driver and you got it handled, it's okay to go
together. I could almost hear them
and take it easy and accept the night. Accept the night.
Go on.
And then the night will come to you. This is the month for the June girlfriend. You will fall in love this month. Nature says you will fall in love this month.
It would be that tender.
Whether you have a significant other or a wife or husband, it's okay to have a June girlfriend, a June boyfriend, a big crush until July 4th, then it has to stop. And I'm not saying you do that. I'm just saying you accept the fact that you fell in love again.
to choose one moment to live within my heart. It would be that tender moment, recalling how we started. Darling, it would be when you smile at me that way, that Sunday, that summer.
Nat Cole with Walter M. Sterling every damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
I confess I have bought things at the TikTok shop. And now Dr. Dave's weather.
Satan lives. Just terrible.
I'm William Devane. Mission Control.
David Scott.
What's happening?
Satan lives. Just terrible.
Now listen, Dave. Dave Scott, Canadian, known Canadian. Host of a great show called Spaced Out Radio. You can hear it on YouTube. Every episode he ever did is on YouTube. Spaced Out Radio. Dave Scott live at about midnight in North America. Your country finally did something great. You ready? I don't even think you know about this. The Ontario government ended tolling the publicity-oriented segment of highway. Oh, it's a typo, but the publicly operated segment of Highway 407 in Greater Toronto, Sunday, June 1st, fulfilling a pledge made by Ontario Premier Doug Ford during his recent re-election campaign. The highway was the only remaining tollway under provincial operation. Ford's government claims workers will save about $7,200 Canadian, or $5,200 U.S. in annual commuting cost as a consequence of toll elimination and fuel tax cuts. The action was justified as a way to lower costs for hard-working families, support local businesses, and put more money back into people's pockets. I have said endlessly on this show, which is why it's number one, that the tolling is criminal. It is money changers in the temple. Anytime there is no work in exchange for money, it's sinful and immoral. It is worse than casinos, much worse than casinos. These roads were built at the latest in the 1950s. They were paid for dozens of times. Those bonds were paid off over and over and over again. And every toll road has a really interesting clause in its deal, in its charter. And the charter says this, that the tolls will be taken down when the bonds are paid off. Unless, in the opinion of the Turnpike, the road authority, it is necessary for safety reasons to build more road. Pour concrete. What exactly company pours concrete? What company is in charge of pouring concrete? And as long as they're pouring concrete, in the interest of safety, Dave, in the interest of safety, they can continue to collect a toll for those bonds to be paid off. So the fact that Mr. Ford sobered up and realized that it was time to get rid of these tolls, I salute him. This is absolutely great. The only toll road I know of in the United States of America, or as you people keep calling it, the lower 48, is Connecticut. Connecticut Turnpike took down their tolls about 10 years ago. That's it. Every other toll road I know has raised their tolls. So congratulations for being a Canadian, Dave Scott.
Well, thank you. But
you know, I wish that that our premier here in British Columbia would learn a little bit from that, because he is addicted to taxing. And he taxes all the wrong reasons and all the right reasons. So good on Doug Ford for doing that.
Good on Doug Ford for doing that. That it's just phenomenal. I'm going to actually present that story every night this week, because he deserves a lot of applause. Meanwhile, the crooks who run the turnpikes and the parkways here in the United States, tolls keep going up. And then the interesting thing about the toll budgets is they should be hidden, but they're not. They're the most easily accessible budget. Wherever you live, just type in the name of your state, toll budget, and it'll pop right up. You don't have to file any forms, nothing. It'll pop right up. And you know what always gets me is most of these roads have two lines that absolutely kill me. One is executive salary. The people running these roads, which are already built, they're making $700,000-$900,000 a year. To do what? And then all of them have a line for public relations. Every tollway seems to have a public relations firm. Do all roads in America need a PR firm? Like, what the hell is this? But I digress. UFOs, Bigfoot, extraterrestrial phenomena. Dave Scott's an expert. What do you have for us tonight, sir?
Well, I'm going to continue our little series that we're doing on Sundays, which is the follow-up of what's happening at the Flight 21 crash site that my buddy Tim and I are investigating. And, Walter, we were there last night, and let me tell you, we got scared out.
Tell everybody exactly where that is and what that is. Start, do it from scratch. Tell us, for those of us who can't follow, can't track anymore.
Okay, Flight 21 is Canada's largest unsolved mass murder. And it happened on July 8th, 1965, when a plane going from Vancouver on a milk run up to the Whitehorse Yukon blew up in the sky. There was a bomb on the plane. They still have not found out or figured out who placed the bomb. The one thing that they are confident on, the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, is that whoever had the bomb in the bathroom of it in a briefcase died on the plane, and they haven't been able to figure it out. So since 2018, we have been investigating this location, and we had some high strangeness last night, my friend, and I will be honest with you, I'm taking a week off next week to just kind of recuperate my thoughts on what happened last night to Tim and I, and we will be going back in 2 weeks' time in order to see what is truly happening out there.
At what point when you were there did you get scared? Because this is an airplane crash site. It had nothing to do with you. It's not a metaphysical or spiritual place. Why did you get scared?
Well, the night, it was really weird, man, because the night started off very, very calm. Everything was calm around us. You could hear the birds off in the distance, because birds are rarely flying in and out of the crash site area, which is probably 60 to 70 yards big. Okay, it's not a very big crash site. I mean, when people think of the plane, it was an old McDonnell Douglas DC-6. Prop plane that crashed there. And so all of a sudden, everything, as it started to get a little bit darker around, right now, like, I'm standing outside, it's about, what time is it here? It's 9:15 Pacific time, and I'm standing in daylight right now, okay? Because we're so much higher up on the earth that we still get a lot more daylight at this time of year going to solstice. And anyways, as it started to get dark, we started hearing noises all around us. And I decided to take a walk up one trail that we have frequented on our investigations. And lo and behold, there is a coin sitting in the middle of the path that has been stepped on by something. It wasn't a boot print, it wasn't anything, but it was embedded in the dirt. This is a coin that has been missing for about 8 months. okay?
Yes.
It was not on that trail, and it is in the middle of the trail. That kind of freaked us out.
Really? Then so you're sure it wasn't there? You're sure it wasn't there before?
We put it this way. We never saw it with our eyes, and it was, Walter, you couldn't walk by it without seeing it.
Got it.
It's impossible. It was right in the middle of the trail. And we have walked this trail. And to a lot of people listening, they may say, well, that means nothing. Maybe somebody was up there, they dropped a coin, and they stepped on it, they forgot about it. No, it was the same one. Hmm. The same one that we planted there a year ago.
Wow.
In order to make a trade with the Sasquatch up there for a staff that he had left leaning against a tree. So anyways, we heard a growl happen in the forest, and we started hearing things walking around us, and my buddy Tim, about 10-15 feet away from us, sees a shadow of a person start walking in and out of the trees. Now, there is no noise. We are in the middle of the forest, so we are 30 miles into the forest. There is not another human being out there. There is one way into this crash site and one way out, and anybody who is anybody that is there would have to walk past us, and there is nobody there. And we went into that area to where it was, and, of course, there's nothing there. If a human was walking through that area, we would have heard the noise. They would have to climb over fallen trees and twigs and branches that would have cracked and broken. But there was nothing. Then the weird part happened. Okay? We were all of a sudden starting to hear squirrels and chipmunks. So why are squirrels and chipmunks weird? Well, they are nature's security alarm. When a person walks into an area, the chipmunk and the squirrel, part of their job for the rest of the animals is to sound their little chirping that they do in order to allow every other animal in the area to stand still. We have something strange coming in here, one of them people coming in here, and we're just letting everybody know to stand still, keep quiet, because they're the security alarm of the forest. But all of a sudden, Walter, we were surrounded by squirrels chirping. We were sitting on lawn chairs. We were not moving. And
that's
all
so
these
cool.
Squirrels kept getting close. The sound of them kept getting closer and closer and closer to us.
That's so cool because squirrels never get closer to us. Dave Scott, Spaced Out Radio, spacedoutradio.com. Go to the website. Ask him questions, send him emails, Spaced Out Radio on YouTube. Every episode that he's done, you'll enjoy the show, and he's Canadian. Sterling, every damn Sunday.
Your heart!
Walmart!
Sterling Shop! Walmart! Sterling Shop!
Considering all the people in this country hopped up on some drug or another, you think that a drug dealer would be a very successful career. But you're going to be wrong. A man from Philadelphia nailed in West Rolton Township. He was inside the Walmart and he stole one of those wonderful robot vacuums. Yeah, robot. AI and robots are about what we do, isn't it? So he got nabbed, and he was carrying lots of little baggies of something called meth, crystal methamphetamine. You ever done meth? I haven't. I've done what I can not to do meth, and I think that's good advice. So Stephen John Devlin, he's old enough to know better, he's 45, he's made a guilty plea for felony possession with intent to deliver meth in connection with his robot vacuum theft. Walmart is on to you. And if you're a drug dealer, if you're dealing the meth or the fentanyl or coke or weed, whatever you're dealing, leave it at home if you're going a thieving. Lots of people get arrested for stealing things, and they generally are walking away a day or two later. Mr. Devlin was stealing while also dealing. It's a bad thing to do. He did not have a buddy with him as he was stealing that robot vacuum. Another miss. While not encouraging drug dealing, right here at 1210 WPHD Sterling every damn night, we want you to know that combining drug dealing and theft is never a good thing. We're here to help. And perhaps it's time to get off the meth. Does anybody have any? I want to try it. For the people of Walmart, this is Velo Hool. 1210 WPHT Sterling every damn night.
Once the door clicked shut behind them, Tabitha turned around. Shoving her against the wall, she captured Astrid's mouth in a crushing kiss, her lips pressing against hers with urgency. The sweet taste of her tongue erased Astrid's initial surprise, and she returned the kiss with fervor.
You can hear me every damn night, even though this radio station is foolish and only carries this show on Sundays. And that's why we call it Sterling on Sundays. But the fact is that we're on every night except Saturday. Here's how you can hear it. Download the Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Yeah, that's how they spell it. It's the worst name for a company. God, a horrible name. Audacy. Because everybody spells it all the other ways that it sounds. They never spell it A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download the app. Click on WPHT or look for Sterling every damn night. Maybe I'll show up in a search. You know I'm not the big deal yet. I'm not like Dom Giordano. Not at the Dom Giordano stage just yet. Or the WFAN stage just yet. But you can hear me on the app every damn night, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. I'm on from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. And this is, it's weird. You know, every industry has its own culture. And in the radio industry, the culture is that, you know, morning drive's a really important thing. 80% of our revenue comes from morning drive. That's because our salespeople find that really easy to sell. And the rest, they'd have to, like, come in from lunch or the movies or, you know, actually sell. But morning drive, well, anyway, and because of that, the big talent wants to work in morning drive. To me, there would be no greater hell than working morning drive. Because, yes, it means you get up when I go to bed. I go to bed at 2:30, 3 o'clock. That way I can be fresh and perky for you at 10 p.m. And I always take an afternoon nap to make sure my show is fresh and perky. Because you and I work at night when the air is clear and we're not distracted by annoying people who have forms. The people who annoy me most are the ones who have forms. You know the form lady. You know who I'm talking about. It's them. The best thing about working the third shift, the late shift, is that them are asleep. My pronouns are father and sir, not they and them. I am father and sir. How about you? And when the form people come around, it's very distressing. But they're only in daylight. At night, they disappear. They go, you know, they're the idiots who believe in that nonsense about the 5 a.m. club. My life changed when I woke up at 5 a.m. Yeah, I'm sure it did. You were dragging your butt at noon by getting up at 5 a.m. That's how it changed your life. There is no benefit to getting up early unless you're on a farm. Are you on a farm? Then you should get up early. Good evening. It's a live radio show. I'm Walter M. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Public Shame Radio. Sterling every damn night.
Midnight Misfits, you, Rebecca Canner, Meryl Kravitz, Neil Paul, Charlie Green. Congratulations, you're Midnight Misfits. Here is your secret message. You need the Dakota card for it. You get the Dakota card at WalterSterlingShow.com. W, 1, ampersand, Z, M as in Mary, N as in Nancy, 7, A. Once more, secret message decoded. W, 1, ampersand, Z, M as in Mary, N as in Nancy, 7A. You can get your Midnight Misfit membership card, waltersterlingshow.com. Every damn week, go. Mortensen, how's that new house in Florida? You doing all right? We miss you, Keith. I hope you've enjoyed our show. What did we learn tonight? We learned that the business that took place in Los Angeles, the quote riot, was like, what? What are you talking about? It was 2,000 people and 1,000 cops? Here, let me take you to Newark in 1969. I'll share with you what I saw in a riot. That was nothing, and I'm glad it was nothing. What a bunch of nonsense. A governor who said nothing, a mayor who said nothing. We're a nation of laws. Let's act like that. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Anything for you to know.
I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Story. Oh, my God. Thank you so much. For our first Florida Story, we're going to Palm Coast, Florida, where there's a video that got passed around on social media because she said she spotted a baby dinosaur running through her yard. I know that sounds stupid, a baby dinosaur. And listen, it's crummy video. It's in black and white, and it's kind of blurry, and it's at night. But I don't know. It kind of looks, it's kind of shaped like a kangaroo. You see it running from the bottom of the frame to the top, but it's this thing that's like hunched over with like little baby arms. And it really, more than anything else, it does. It looks like a velociraptor from Jurassic Park or Jurassic World or any of that franchise. I mean, it could be something else, but it has like big hind legs and like little short front arms. And it looks like a velociraptor from Jurassic World. So I can't even argue with that. So what's going on? I have no idea. Hold my beer.
Wait, hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Next Florida story, we're going to a place called Davie, Florida, where a guy had a couple of extra drinks that he shouldn't have had before he got behind the wheel of a car. And he bounced off of a street sign, bounced off of a little building, the sign for a gas station, hit a pedestrian and killed him, and came to a stop finally when he hit another building. When the cop showed up, the quote is, "Chill, I'm just a little intoxicated." Well, yeah, you killed another human being, so I don't think we're going to chill very much, but good job, Florida man. Hold my beer.
Wait, hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we're going up to South Dakota. We have a 40-year-old Florida woman who is from Daytona Beach, but she's up at the Rapid City Regional Airport, and she had had a few drinks before she got on the plane, and when the plane was delayed taking off, she became a little unruly, is the word they use here in the Rapid City Journal. And as the staff's trying to calm her down, there's an indecent exposure that happens repeatedly. So they call the cops. They're like, listen, you can't be popping them out here in the middle of a plane on the tarmac in Rapid City, South Dakota. And so when they grab her arm to pull her off the plane, she yanks her arm away and kicks the cop. So then they have to drag her off the plane like a sack of potatoes, just kicking and screaming all the way.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
And for our last Florida story, this is a tragic one. Altamont Springs, Florida, where a 21-year-old woman is doing one of those boring Zoom calls where you have the checkerboard, the sort of Hollywood squares of your coworkers on there. And one of the coworkers hears a boom, which is, you know, usually a no-no because you're supposed to be muted. But this is kind of important because the woman's 2-year-old toddler had found the baby's daddy's handgun and shot the 21-year-old Florida mom in the back of the head during a Zoom call. She falls over dead. Everyone freaks out, calls the cops, the aristocrat.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Florida Stories is produced by Spring Rock. Follow me on Twitter at Florida Stories J. I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the owl and dawn.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my short story collection, Disintegration, The Prequels. A storm of emotions swept through her as she hurried down the hill. Devin waited for her at the end of the path. The last splashes of sunlight permeated the branches of the tree, and she saw a hover scooter parked at the base. His lips spread into a wide smile when she ran up to him. I was starting to worry, he said. Since when have I ever given you any reason to doubt me? Never. He pulled her toward him for a kiss. How did the conversation with Alistair go? Rose shrugged. As best as could be expected, I guess. I hope he doesn't think I sabotaged his garage or anything. I didn't tell him I was running away with you. She shifted her bag on her shoulder. I figured it was bad enough already. I understand. Devin touched her arm. If you're having second thoughts, I'm not. Okay, good. Let's go. Devin climbed aboard the compact vehicle. She joined him on the small platform and wrapped her arms around his waist. He maneuvered the hover scooter through the dilapidated cottages, past the abandoned gardens. Dusty green strips dissolved into an expanse of barren sand, and they were on their way. The newfound sense of freedom eroded any lingering uncertainty. She peeked over Devin's shoulder as they skimmed across the desert, savoring the exhilaration tingling in her nerves. In less than an hour's time, the outskirts of the city of Lencel appeared on the horizon. They steered toward the dark smudges, and Ro watched as the buildings grew larger and larger. A brief inquisition of pedestrians on the streets led them to an inexpensive motel. Devin parked the hover scooter in the designated area behind the low building, setting the security code as they disembarked. He led Ro into the small lobby and approached the clerk at the desk. Her heart throbbed as Devin made arrangements for a room. She would finally be with him for the night, with nothing left to stand in their way. After paying the clerk, they strode down the corridor, hand in hand, trying not to run. He unlocked the door and pushed it open. tossing his bag to the side. He flopped onto the bed and lay on his back, wedging a pillow beneath his head. Ro took off her jacket and draped it over a chair. "Comfortable?" she asked as she untied her sneakers. "Very." He kicked off his own shoes. "So, what shall we do first? Get some dinner? See if we can find a deck of playing cards?" She pounced on him, flattening her body against his. The mattress was uneven, and the blankets were scratchy, but it was their first time sharing an actual bed. She tweaked his nose and dragged her fingertip down over his lips. "You can't think of anything better to do?" His fingers threaded through her hair, already tousled by the wind. He guided her mouth toward his and gave her a playful nibble. "What did you have in mind?" he teased. I'm smutty book author Theo Landon, and you're listening to an excerpt from my short story collection, Disintegration, The Prequels, which can be found at Amazon and at theolandon.com. If you'd like to hear some uncensored excerpts and get a sneak peek of what's coming up next, you can go to patreon.com/TheoLandon. And don't forget, you can always reach out to me at smuttythea@gmail.com. Now, let's find out what happens next. She kissed him, letting her tongue mingle with his in a luxurious exploration. They had been blessed with the gift of time, with no outside circumstances to rush them along. She was torn between wanting to take her time to investigate and exploit every available inch of his body and impaling herself on him. Snaking a hand between them, she yanked the bottom of his shirt out of his pants. "Do you want me to list everything on my mind, or should I show you?" Devin raised his arms and let her pull the t-shirt off over his head. He reclined against the pillows, and she gazed upon his broad shoulders and well-defined chest. He traced a line around the ridges of his pecs and trailed a finger through the downy fuzz leading to his navel. Tanned skin stretched over taut muscles. She couldn't get enough of him. Ro leaned forward, determined to cover as much of him as possible with fluttery kisses. Her lips traversed his neck, skating toward the hard edges she had studied, while she lavished attention upon him with her mouth. Her fingers crept down to the top of his pants. As soon as she released the button, he nudged her away. "My turn," he said. With her legs still straddling his, Devin sat up. He removed her shirt and deftly unfastened her bra. Though time was of no consequence to them, he made a beeline for her chest, heaving in front of his face, draping his arms around her waist. Her back arched and she squealed. Frantic gasps blossomed into passionate moans as he increased his pressure. When she looked down, she saw him peering up at her through his dark lashes. The carnal haze in his eyes sent flames unfurling over every nerve in her body. Cool air caressed her moistened skin when he released her, before his hand took the place of his lips. "You can be as loud as you want tonight," he murmured against her trembling flesh. "We're not hiding anymore." "Unfortunately, I need to stop here for tonight. But you know you can always have more." That was an excerpt from my short story collection, Disintegration, The Prequels, which is available at Amazon and at thealandon.com. For the uncensored excerpts, you can go to patreon.com/thealandon. And don't forget, you can always email me to share your thoughts at smuttythea@gmail.com. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
Email waltermsterling@gmail. I answer every email. I've got a pretty good website, waltersterlingshow.com, waltersterlingshow.com. And the greatest gift that you and I can receive is a request for help.
Now, the credit roll for Sterling Every Damn Night, featuring the extreme talent of Dave Scott, Thea Landon, Charles Van Zandt, Peter Thiel, Dan and Becky Gaffney, Dave Iger, Sean Serino, Father James Drucker, Jill Brooke, Steve and Selena, Alexander Castiles, David Gargaroff, Gene Stalker, Vic Ferrari, starring Walter Sterling, and I'm your announcer, James Copeland, a KWMDS production.